Hi, this is Alison from Sanctuary, reflecting on the story of Mary and Martha, as we find that in Luke chapter 10. If ever there's a story which tends to make women angry, it's probably this one. Mary, that goody two-shoes, is lazing adoringly at Jesus' feet. Well, I'm stuck in the kitchen washing the bloody dishes and making sure there's food to eat. Because someone has to serve the guests, and someone has to clean up afterwards, and someone has to sweep the crumbs off the floor. And if everyone just lolls about listening to Jesus, we'd never eat a vegetable, and the house would be a total mess. And yet, Jesus praises Mary? That bitch. Do you hear the envy, the frustration, the grief, and the longing? Martha is crashing around the kitchen, clanging pots and pans and muttering under her breath. She feels obliged to offer hospitality, but she so desperately wants to be sitting with her sister at the feet of Jesus. And because we see the world through patriarchal eyes, we tend to mishear Jesus and we keep those sisters apart. We think he's telling Martha to stop cooking dinner, because we all know that reading the Bible and listening to preaching and wrestling with the scriptures is best. And so women the world over feel belittled and resentful as they hover in the kitchen and stir the pot and serve the meal and do the dishes afterwards, while the men sit around doing the good thing of listening to Jesus. We don't often ask why women are so often the ones in the kitchen, and why so few men take real responsibility for housework. We don't often ask why in our cities restaurants are filled with white customers talking importantly, while people of colour chop, cook and plate their food. We don't often roll our eyes when people at church say complacently, "I'm very much a Mary. I always sit and listen to Jesus," as a Martha whisks the dirty dishes away into the kitchen for washing up. We don't because we think in binaries, Mary, Martha, contemplation, action, and we preference the powerful who have the luxury of choosing to sit. Jesus says sitting and listening is a better part. Who are we to argue? But actually he doesn't. He does not criticize Martha's activity per se. He has no problem with her cooking dinner, and it would be completely inconsistent if he did. Throughout the Gospels, he praises those who serve, and he raises them up as models for everyone else. On the night that he is betrayed, he takes on the role of the lowliest slave girl, and he washes his disciples' feet. "If you want to be like me," he says, "wash your children's stinky feet, wash the cracked and damaged feet of the homeless, wash the feet of the sick, the suffering and the dying. Invite the poor and the marginalized into your homes and serve, serve, serve." And he doesn't pit sister against sister. That was Martha's doing. For Jesus came not to divide, but to unite, to bring people together in love, to lead sisters into healthy relationship. So how does he do this? First, we must remember that this is a story. Things in the story have meaning. And in this story, Martha invites Jesus into her dwelling. "Dwell in me," he says in John, "and I will dwell in you." In other words, Martha is inviting Jesus Christ into her very self. But for Christ to make a home in Martha, some things will need to change. This is what happens to every one of us when we invite Christ in. We will be renovated from the inside out. Maybe our heart of stone will be transformed into a heart of flesh, able to feel both pleasure and pain. Maybe our tight grip on our bank account will be relaxed into an open-handed generosity. Maybe fear and anxiety will no longer control us and we'll begin to live with trust. Or maybe, like Martha, the unacknowledged envy and longing which chew us up and drive us to distraction will be rebuked. The voice of accusation, which accuses a guest of not caring and a sister of not contributing, will be challenged. For this is what Jesus tackles. Not Martha's domestic work, not her cooking, for in God's kingdom culture, service is ministry. Instead, Jesus rebukes the voice of the accuser, more commonly known as Satan. For Jesus recognizes that God is not yet the source of Martha's life and work and speech. And this is where the problem lies. She's being driven to distraction by envy. She wants to sit with Jesus. She wants to be with her sister, but she cannot claim that freedom. So she pushes them both away. And when she does this, she becomes passive-aggressive. She doesn't speak directly to her sister, you notice. Instead, she triangulates. She tries to rope in a powerful guest, using him for her own purposes. He becomes an object to her. She blames Mary for not helping, even although Martha was the person who invited the guest in. And she blames the guest for not caring. She implies that things are unjust and unfair. She suggests she's a victim. She's self-centered and she's accusatory. In other words, Martha's heart is deeply, deeply troubled, and it's not yet grounded in God. It's into this heart at war that Jesus speaks, saying, there should be only one thing, only one thing. And this one thing is not any particular action or approach. It's not Mary versus Martha, spiritual versus material, contemplation versus action. Instead, this one good thing is to connect with God, the source of overflowing life. It's to invite Jesus to dwell in you and to let him make those necessary renovations so that you too become Christ-like, centered, grounded, whole, and at peace with the world and yourself. When you are whole, Mary will no longer be the object of your envy, and you will no longer rope in Jesus to justify your position and uphold your grievances. When you are whole, you will trust that your sister is following the Spirit's call on her life, and you will not blame her for the Spirit's call on yours. When you are whole, you will notice the voice of accusation when it rises in you, and you will confess it in prayer and let it go. And then you'll put down your wooden spoon and go sit with your sister, draping an arm around her as together you listen to Jesus and open yourself to his word. As together you allow him to dwell ever more deeply in you. Then, confident and true, you will return to your God-ordained, God-filled, God-led work. Whether it's raising children, or teaching people, or serving the vulnerable, or advocating for the powerless, reconciling relationships, or caring for the earth, or praying for the world, or simply listening to Jesus that little bit longer. Or perhaps your work is cooking dinner. And with a wiggle in your hips and a smile on your lips, you will go back to the kitchen. And this time, as you tie on that apron and stir that soup, you will lift your voice and sing. Amen. That's all for today. God be with you as you listen to Jesus and find your God-ordained, God-filled, God-led work. Amen.